Blog Talk Radio.
Emily, and I'm here with Mike, and tonight we have a show for you on beauty. Basically, we're going to be talking about beauty in our society, what constitutes beautiful for men, and what constitutes beautiful for women, and we'll be discussing how these things come about, what are the origins of beauty in our society, and what factors into one's desire to be beautiful. Then we'll go into the means that people use to get to their standard of beauty, and the ramifications of such means. It should be a good show. We will also be taking callers, so if you're interested in calling in, our phone number is 646-727-3928. And I think we're going to begin the show by discussing what beauty is in our society. So I'm going to pose a question for you, Mike. What is the standard of beauty for women in our society? And just to note here, this isn't necessarily our beliefs. We're just discussing mass media and the magazine image of women. So go ahead.
Right. Definitely not a statement of personal preference or anything like that. But I think that the image that the media at large furthers of female beauty is, you know, the size zero, tan skin, maybe muscular, possibly toned a little bit. Maybe bleached blonde hair, lots of makeup, you know, the traditional Vogue model.
So what we want is healthy, happy, voluptuous, maybe, perfect in every form, essentially. There's not a flaw, there's no hair out of place type girl, right?
Right, and because if she is those things, then, you know, she's successful. That's what we want to be, you know. She's famous, she's beautiful, she's successful.
So I like that you mentioned success, because that's something else that we're going to be addressing is success and what it is to be successful. And I think that you summed it up pretty nice when you said to be beautiful, you know, like if you are the standard, then you are successful, right?
Yeah, I can see that. I can see that being furthered by the media at large, absolutely.
So what about men?
I think it's a little harder to pigeonhole the image of men, but I think the adage goes tall, dark, and handsome, right? You know, possibly a little rugged, maybe the lumberjack type, maybe not. Toned, physically fit. Definitely other measures of success, whether it be money or, you know, fast cars, or there's something to be said there. I'm not sure exactly how to say it, though, as far as money is concerned.
I think that what you're kind of addressing here is that for women it's very physical, and for men it's almost like this mysterious aspect.
There's some competitive edge to be had,
okay.
Whether it be, you know, winning at sports, whatever it is. I think there's something there.
Okay. So I'm picturing like a rugged, handsome type man, like maybe like a Brad Pitt type, right? Like,
right,
I guess
exactly.
He's the stereotype in our society of what it is. So you mentioned the media. And you said the media continues this image.
They further it.
Right.
Yeah.
So how do they do that?
Well, that's a complicated issue on itself. But, you know, whether it be the commercials with the newest skincare line, or, you know, a clothing commercial for Prada or Coach. I don't even know that many. See how sad it is. But through commercials, also through things like movies and TV shows, you're seeing these beautiful women, these size zero, no flaws, possibly cosmetically altered. Maybe we won't go there right now, but, you know, perfected women. And I think that whether we choose to accept it or not, there's a certain standard the media is setting all across the board.
Okay. And what about all the people that say, I don't subscribe to that, you know, I don't really care what the media has to say. Do you think that there's any truth behind that? Do you think that there really are people who can just shut themselves off to these images?
Possibly, but I think you would agree that you might be one of those people who shuts yourself off, and ultimately it's still there in the back of your head, you know?
Right.
No matter how much you try to accept yourself for who you are,
mm-hmm.
I think there's always going to be that standard that you hold yourself up against, you know, that unattainable, ridiculous standard.
Right. Yeah, no, I would totally agree. Just thinking about my own life, you know, I do agree that I'm one of those people that says I can shut myself off to that. But at the same time, when I'm surrounded by people who do fit that
right.
description, you get a little bit uneasy,
mm-hmm.
you know.
And when you're getting it on all the TV shows and all, when you're seeing it all the time.
Right, right. And so what I'm interested in for the purposes of this discussion is if we're seeing it all the time and, you know, we're relatively adult, what effect does this have on young people who are also seeing this all the time?
You know, that's an interesting question. I don't know any findings that psychology has had about the issue, but just my own sort of life experiences, I can imagine that it has some pretty strong effects. You know,
mm-hmm.
whether that just immersion in this culture, when you're brought up in a culture, we do know scientifically fact that you start to tote that culture. You know, when you're brought up with a specific belief about God, your chances of retaining that belief increase greatly, and thus is true with most other beliefs. You're predisposed to it, I guess you would say.
Hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yes. Yeah, it does.
And, you know, that's just conjecture, but I can definitely see that.
Hmm. Well, I do know some findings, not too much in terms of psychological data, but I know that in adolescence, self-esteem is very vulnerable, and that around middle school age, if we can all remember how awkward that was, the self-esteem in young girls drops drastically, and I think that it's at a rate of two times higher depression than boys. So I don't know if I'm just speculating here, but I think that that could definitely have something to do with these images that we're being bombarded with as to what beauty is.
And, you know, I'm not sure if it's Piaget or which psychologist it was, but isn't that the age when you start to become aware of the world at large, when you stop looking, 11 mm-hmm. to 13, when you stop looking at your own sphere and kind of increase to the country or the continent on out?
That could be.
There might
that
be something
be.
There.
I've never read that data. I'm just trying to remember my own years, but it could be. And given the fact that at this age, you know, you're incredibly vulnerable to everything, essentially, these images of these super thin models and then the commercials advertising diet pills and the magazines that talk about plastic surgery and this and that, for 12, 13, 14-year-olds, this could be very detrimental.
Yeah, I guess you could just accept it as a fact of life that this is how things are.
You could accept it. So what I'm interested in, though, is, like, this new generation of teenagers is very different than generations past in that there is so much easier access to information and media, and the variety of TV that is on is completely different than decades past. And I guess we could spend a few minutes talking about the new television that it's been on for quite a while, but like this generation that is coming up now is really growing up with this new type of media, more so than our own generation. So we could talk about that, and I guess we can start out with reality TV. what do you have to say about reality TV? Why do you think these shows are so intriguing for people?
I've heard the arguments, you know, it's an escape from my own life, and it's more convincing than a movie because it's someone else's life. Personally, I'm not sure that I can give you an accurate insight, but I've definitely seen the explosion of reality TV, you know, whether it's Survivor or I'm trying to think of some of the more banal or trite ones. I can't come up with anything. Paris Hilton.
Oh, yeah, the Kardashians.
Right, there you go. Exactly. I can't express the allure to that myself, but I know it exists. I see it. I'm sure you
mm-hmm.
do, too. I'm
mm-hmm.
sure everyone does.
Right, and I think, like, virtually every TV channel out there has some type of reality show. Like, if it's not, like, the bridal shows, it's the cooking shows, or it's the Kardashians, or whatever it is. So it's everywhere, and I think, personally, like you said, it's a way of escaping your own life and experiencing someone else's. But given that these shows all depict these extreme upper classes, not all the shows, but a lot of the shows, they depict these extreme upper classes that constitute like less than 5% of the American population. And, you know, you have like these people on these shows spending money and doing things that the majority of us can only think about doing. But they call it reality. They're coining this as reality TV, which is very interesting to me because it's not reality for the majority of us. And we can only simply be like passive onlookers and dream about this. So what type of values are young people and older people getting from these shows that have, you know, you can't relate to these shows. There is no relation to your life. There's no relation between me and Kim Kardashian, you know. I mean, it just doesn't work out that way because we're living in two completely different worlds. So what is it that intrigues us so much about these people that allows us to think that this is reality?
I don't know how many of us are convinced. I guess it would have a lot to do with what age you're introduced at. How many of us are convinced that that is, you know, an attainable or even a desirable reality. You know, maybe it is attainable and just simply not desirable. But I agree with you. It's definitely, in most cases, a fantastic image. You know, it's a trumped up and usually not even real image. You know, when you look at what is edited out of these shows, they're doctored up. You know, they're framed in a certain light that in most cases isn't even the truth. So I don't know how many of us buy into it. Probably depends on age, whether or not it is an attainable level of reality, but there's no question many of us find it a desirable level of reality, you know, if only.
Right. Well, before the show, you and I were talking about reality TV, and while most of us would agree that it's not reality, quote-unquote, I think that there's still some of us who would model parts of it in our lives, and I gave the example of intimate relationships with one another and how reality TV depicts everything as very, very dramatic and going from one relationship to another to another. And I have a feeling that this could have something to do with our own society's drama in relationships, if that makes any sense.
It does. I would sort of make a chicken or the egg, you know, argument.
Right.
I'm not sure which came first, if it was the quote-unquote drama in society or the reality TV portrayals. But just the little snippets I've seen of things like The OC or The Hills, you know, it's fairly clear that drama is a way of life in those situations. And by drama, we're talking about relationships, arguments. Can you think of a better way to characterize it than drama?
I think that's perfect.
Okay.
And when you think about it, how many people actually want drama in their lives? You know, I want things to be simple and stress-free, but apparently most people don't. So on a larger scale, rather than looking at these small, these individual people and thinking about their relationships, what type of future does society hold when everyone is subscribing to these types of realities? I mean, does that frighten you a bit?
It does. It does. I think there's an ominous sort of degradation of personal relationships there. I think it's looming in the mist. If that were the case, you know, if we all held this ideal of reality TV as what we're looking for, I can definitely see a degradation of personal relationships. I'm having a tough time thinking of a better way to say it than that, but I guess largely just that people won't behave like people anymore. They'll behave like the people on TV do, and I'm not comfortable with that. You know, to me, that's not how people act.
It's not genuine.
Right, it's not genuine.
And it's a little bit worrisome, like you said. But we have a caller, so I'm going to take that quick. Hello?
Hello!
Hi!
Hello. This is DCT, by the way. How are y'all people doing?
Good. How are you doing?
Yeah, This is the second time I called this show. I called this on, I think the last time I called was talking about, I think it was choice or something, about,
yep.
Huh?
Compromise.
Oh, yeah, compromise, yes. But this is actually interesting about beauty and, you know, what type of, you know, the whole thing about, well, if you look a certain way or you have some way, you get more oriented. You know, and to me, the psychological effects of that is like when you're like a kid, you like a little kid, and it's worse than females, actually, because if you don't look like the Disney princesses or Barbie or anything else, you're a failure in life. So you got to go to have plastic surgeries, you got to do this, that. You know, you value, like if you look a certain way, then you are accepting this society. If you have any type of flaw or blemish, you can just go to a surgery, plastic surgeries to cut and get rid of them. Or you need to get your breast enhanced, or you get your body enhanced. All this type of enhancements and all this type of stuff to just really, and it's really type of just very, very sick. It's just like some type of you really have to look at and everything. You know, it's not, I'm not saying you just to settle for what you are. If you want to get better, just do the natural things of, you know, working out and all that stuff. But I don't think that people, men and women, should just go out and get, like, you know, surgery or, you know, stuff like that, unnecessary surgeries that will help hurt them in the long run and such, like these Botoxes or, you know, getting, like, shaving, like 10 or 20, like, you know, cutting their body parts just to see if they can look just as like the models and such. You know, that sort of thing. You know, because I think beauty and, you know, all this other stuff is really, really just takes, like, it just breaks you down to just self-esteem. If you don't, like, you know, if you don't look a certain way, you'll get shunned, you'll become, like, some type of creature or thing or anything else like that, and that's wrong.
Well, you brought up a lot of interesting points I think we still intend to address, but I think what I hear you saying is that the future of society, should this trend continue, is not a pretty picture. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, it isn't. It's just the whole, it's like what's the media or what picture is saying what beauty is. It's like when you're a little kid, you see what beauty is, like you watch Snow White or Aladdin, like these characters are beautiful or things like that. See, the girl is beautiful, or the guy is supposed to look like, or the girl is supposed to look like, and anything else is complete difference from the norm, which is, I think, is very wrong. Everyone is unique and different, and I think that's the problem. In that, you have this whole beautiful, like, if your mind is not, you know, if you don't fit, like, if you don't have, like, those looks or anything else, you're a failure. You fail, you have no, you can't do anything, you're ugly, you're horrible, and you know no one's going to like you, you're going to remain ugly and alone for the rest of your life.
Right. Yeah, and I'm glad that you brought up plastic surgery, because that was actually going to be our next point. So what I'm hearing from you is that you think that plastic surgery and all of these means to beauty are simply covering up a deeper problem.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Very much so. It's very disturbing. And me as a 24-year-old guy can see this. I mean, I don't really, because, you know, it's like everyone's like have this scale, like, you know, and of course, I don't want to change topics, but the way women are just, you know, like, oh, well, it's like, oh, I can bang, like, these, like, these are 10s, these are 9s, or anything else. If you head below that, you're, what's wrong with you, you're, how they rank or anything else. It's just, you know, a little disturbing. It's like, what beauty is, and no one really knows what beauty is. It's all in the media, as they're telling you since you're a little kid, hammering what beauty is, what this is, and this that is. There's no real true definition of beauty of being beautiful. It's only really what you really think of yourself. It's a feeling. And it's like, if I'm beautiful, I know I'm beautiful, and you know, and it's not what the media says.
Mm-hmm.
So you
but
think
it's just what you, it's what you see for yourself, and it's what everything else is. It's what you see for yourself. It's not like, you know, what the televisions are talking heads tell what beauty is, and you know they don't know what beauty is. because they've been drilled in their heads of, you know, what beauty is since they were kids as well, and so on and so forth. And I'm hoping that maybe in society, hopefully when we keep going forward, that we'll look and say, hey, maybe this isn't the, you know, what beautiful people are or anything else. I'm not saying lower the standards, but to me, you keep them so up to a, like, a, you know, you keep having this thought like, oh, this is the perfect person or the beautiful, you know, mindset and like that, you're not really going to go anywhere. You're just going to have more self-hating, self-loathing, and, you know, people are going to say, you know, what's wrong with them? And it's going to just bring them to a very dark path.
So I hear you saying also that the media is reporting our own.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. I had a little something up there and everything. I had to talk to my mom.
Sorry. It's all right. So I think I hear you saying that the media replaces our own image of beauty, that it's taking something away that belongs to us. Is that right?
Yeah.
Well, let me ask you a bit of a deeper question. I think I heard you hinting at it, but what do you think the problem is? You know, these women that are getting these plastic surgeries, why do you think they're doing that? You know, sure, you could say to match this, you know, unrealistic image, but personally, why would a woman want to do that? What would her motive for doing that be?
My personal thing, validation, something that validates them, who they are.
Okay, so validation, possibly even self-esteem?
Yes, very much so. Validation and self-esteem. That's why people would do anything for money or anything else for that issue. You know what I mean? Because if you look a certain way, you get a certain dress or get something like that, you feel like, yes, everything is perfect. Everything is, I'm going to make it. But it's not like that. You know, life is not like that. And hopefully, and I guarantee you, I think that's one of the main reasons why you see, you know, that's why I bet these teenage girls have, like, suicide or something like that. It's because they feel like they're not pretty, they're not loved. That means pretty or beautiful, that means they're not going to be loved or anything else. And they're just going to just, they think that that's it. And that's really a sad thought and everything, but it happens.
Definitely. So beauty is a self-esteem issue. We appreciate your call. We appreciate where you took that. We're going to go ahead and open the line up back for other callers. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, man. Thank you. Great show, too, man.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
On that note, Emily, what do you think about that self-esteem issue? How do you think that plays into the beauty, possibly plastic surgery? Do you think that has any relation?
I think it does, and I think that our caller brought up a lot of really interesting points. I think the self-esteem really does play into it. And as he was saying about the media and how they don't, I think he said that they don't know what beauty is either.
Right.
I think that's really interesting. And I think he was making the point, basically, that beauty is, you know, what you've naturally got. Would you agree?
It's eye of the beholder, to be certain.
Right. And that brings me to an interesting discussion that I've been having in one of my classes lately about magazines. And how the images in magazines are all photoshopped, and rather than seeing the age lines or the little bit of tummy flub, they're all photoshopped. And so I think it's really interesting that there are now emerging movements to get realistic women into the media, especially you know, the Dove commercials with the size 8 to 10 to 12 models that are, you know, in their underwear and laughing with glee. So I think that's interesting. Like, we are getting these small movements that are beginning to bring in these essentially very attractive people that look like normal, everyday you and me, Joe Schmoes, but they're, you know, on TV now, which I think is cool.
That is cool. So you said that they're all photoshopped. Now, I remember reading a statistic. Unfortunately, I don't have it in front of me, but it was brought up by this conversation between us, that something like 85% of photos in magazines get a minimum of 3 hours photoshopping.
Wow,
you
that's
think about
it?
That? I'm not right. I'm not sure about that statistic, you know, in the scheme of things, but I know it's something very close to that. You think about that, every photo you see in a magazine has been, you know, doctored. It's been, wrinkles have been removed, you know,
mm-hmm.
Tummies have been tucked. male, female, even animals. You know, they're all photoshopped, perfected, fixed. That's kind of scary.
Right.
There's something a little sinister about that.
It is. And it's again, creating, literally, it is unrealistic for people to look that way because they are now computer generated.
We don't even have subject matter to photograph. We have to create that perfect image because no one like that exists.
And what I think is really interesting about that is, you know, we've all been in the supermarkets and seeing the tabloids that say, like, who's this celebrity without her makeup on? And I'm like, what? I mean, how interesting to have someone take a picture of you without your makeup on and you look like a normal person without makeup on and they're calling you ugly, you know? What would they call me? You know, I have makeup on and, I mean, I look just like that. So it's kind of interesting. What they're saying is beauty is really digitally altered, which is kind of frightening.
Yeah, I think that that's exactly what the media is saying.
Well, our caller mentioned plastic surgery, and that was actually something that we plan on discussing, so I figure we could start that discussion now.
Sure, fantastic.
In my research, I found a website, which was www.plasticsurgery.org, and this is about plastic surgery in America. And there was part of the website that you can go to, and there's a picture of a man and a picture of a woman, and you can hover your mouse over any part of their body, and it'll tell you all of the different procedures that it'll do for that part of your body. So, you know, I checked it out. And your face, okay, just your face alone had dozens of different things that you could do and things that I'd never heard of. So I think that's really interesting. I wish I could tell you some of them right off the top of my head, but I don't remember. It's kind of disturbing. So what's interesting about that is in 2007 in the U.S., there were nearly 11.7 million cosmetic surgeries, and, you know, that can range anything from, like, breast implants to tummy tucks to chemical peels or whatever, and that seems like a lot.
Yeah, I don't know what percentage of the population that is, but that's certainly not a small number.
I mean, like, they're literally finding, like, you know, anything about you that can be fixed. And what I want to know is, first off, what causes one to desire plastic surgery? And then after the surgery, are these people feeling fulfilled?
Well,
like, I personally don't know very many people who have had plastic surgery, so I can't pull my friends or anything. But
right. I think the cause, I don't think we would be, you know, off kilter to assume that it might be this unrealistic, unattainable image, whether it be furthered by the media or, you know, magazines, media, I guess. But it's this image of perfection, because, I mean, that must be what we're trying to reach, right? If we're perfecting ourselves, what's the goal? I think it's got to be this perfect image. But, you know, the question really is, I think, what does that do? You know, what problem are we solving here? Okay, you're making yourself closer to that image, but why, you know?
Well, and are we solving any problem here? I mean, is the problem really solved? I've been thinking a lot about Aristotle lately, and in his Ethics, he talks about what constitutes a complete life. And, you know, he explicitly rules out wealth and honor and things like this because it's just a means to an end. And I would think beauty is also just a means to an end. I don't remember if he explicitly said beauty. Do you recall?
I don't recall either. I know the passage you're speaking of, though.
Right. So I think that that's interesting is, you know, beauty is just a means to an end. And once you're beautiful, what do you have left? What, you know?
Right.
Where do you go from there?
Once the end is achieved, what are you left with?
But again, the end can never really be achieved, so I guess that you're always striving for that because, you know, you're going to age, and even with all the plastic surgery in the world, you're still going to age, so.
Which brings up another interesting point, you know, how do you look 30 years after 60 cosmetic surgeries?
Yeah.
Because I think there's definitely a finite number to be found in there.
Right, right.
You know, point of diminishing returns.
It's frightening. So, there's plastic surgery, but there's also issues like diet pills and extreme dieting. And I have, oh, we have another caller, so I will take that quick. Hello?
Hi, I didn't mean to interrupt your rant about diet pills, so please continue.
Oh, that's fine.
Are
you getting static, or?
No, I'm not. Are you?
Yeah.
Yeah, unfortunately we are, but we'll suffer through it. Go ahead.
God, I'm so sorry. Maybe I could call back from a different number. Is it been unsufferable?
Yeah.
Okay. Calling back from a different number.
All right, we'll wait for you.
Diet pills in the meantime.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye. Okay, so hopefully we'll be hearing back. But back to diet pills, I have some interesting and some frightening statistics to throw out there for our listeners. I found that 20% of 19 to 20-year-old females are on diet pills.
20%. That's one-fifth of all 19 to 20-year-old females.
Right. That's a lot when you say it like that. 63% of high school girls engage in unhealthy weight control behavior.
Can you give me an idea of exactly what a unhealthy weight control behavior is?
I would think skipping meals. This could range from anything from skipping meals to purging.
Oof.
To eating crackers all day, you know,
yeah.
You know, things like this. And 22% of teenage girls follow regimes considered very unhealthy weight control behaviors. So probably purging would be in there. And so that was all found from AphroditeWomensHealth.com, and I will try and get the links up on the website for all of our listeners. But basically, that seems huge, and I think that just thinking about our own lives, we can all think of some women or girls who have engaged in unhealthy behaviors like this, which is frightening. It makes it seem that much more real, and it looks like our caller is back, so we'll take that. If this is going to work. Hello, caller?
Hello, is this better?
Yes, perfect.
Good old AT&T. okay, so I don't know where you guys were because I haven't been listening for the last few minutes while I was catching the other phone. But just going back to beauty, self-esteem, plastic surgery, you know, the whole gamut. You mentioned Aristotle. I also want to... And I think the reason why Aristotle doesn't mention beauty is because beauty has really been the standard for women. Like, men do not really base their self-worth to the extent that women do on beauty. And so to that, I want to actually relay a passage from John Stuart Mill's On the Subjection of Women. And he says, when we put together these three things, first, the natural attraction between the opposite sexes. Second, and this is not as much true now as it was when he was writing it, but he says, second, the wife's entire dependence on the husband, every privilege or pleasure she has being either his gift or depending entirely on his will. And lastly, this is the third thing, that the principal object of human pursuit, consideration, and all objects of social ambition can in general be sought or obtained by her only through him. And this was the state of affairs not too long ago. It would be a miracle if the object of being attractive to men had not become the polar star of feminine education and formation of character. And so what he's saying is, given the regime that women found themselves in, which is like they can get nothing without a man, of course a woman's going to be completely focused on beauty because mm-hmm. That's the means by which she obtains the goods that she can get at all. Now, in contrast to that, I also wanted to relay what Hilda Domine, and actually if you've seen our website, ethicstalk.cmish.edu, and there's a picture of a woman, a younger woman, and an older woman. It's the same woman. That's Hilda Domine, and she was I'm not sure if she's still alive, but German poet, very accomplished poet in her own right. And she says, actually, at one point, being pretty is a disadvantage. And then she says later on, this is a quote from her, it is an advantage not to be so young anymore because nobody wants to sleep with you. Now, I mention this because Hilda Domine was actually somebody who found her self-worth based on some, you know, something else other than beauty in her art of, you know, poetry. And so this is the problem that still to this day, and the media is not helping, women are basically bombarded with the message that their happiness is being beautiful rather than the cultivation of some skill or talent. And I'm just pointing out that here's Hilda Domine, who cultivated, you know, she was revered and still is revered as a poet, actually saying that in her trade being attractive was a disadvantage because people were trying to sleep with her and then distract her from her work. So I just wanted to realize that. Do you guys have any follow-up questions for me or comments before I hang
well,
up?
Personally, I'm glad you mentioned the beauty as sort of a bargaining chip to get a husband, you know, as a means to get in a relationship, because I think that definitely still exists. And
mm-hmm.
you said that, but, you know, whether our media image is remnants from that, it very well could be. It's taken on a life
mm-hmm.
of its own. I think that's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right. You know, it was a bargaining chip, and it still is in many parts of society.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And insofar as, like, the overwhelming majority of CEOs and the people who hold the wealth are men, and, like, there's a new, like, market of women with disposable income, these career women who are sort of, you know, not really pursuing a traditional family role and so forth, and if you've ever watched Sex and the City, you know, there's this idea that if you're such a woman, you need to be spending like $500 on a pair of shoes, and people are really capitalizing on this fact that you have these women who are alone, who are career-driven, but there's still this remnant of being attractive that is being used by the corporate world on this particular demographic still. So.
Right, and I could see how, in the corporate world, how being unattractive would help you in that people would be, I guess, possibly working with you and listening to your ideas rather than looking at your body. But then there's also that idea of if you're unattractive in the corporate world, like there are women who do use their beauty to further their careers. So there's two sides of it there.
Sure, yeah. But anyway, my point is just that yeah, I think it is a relic that it's still with us
mm-hmm.
and that it's still being used by the corporate world and by media and by people who are quite frankly trying to make money off of us
mm-hmm.
by basically telling us that if we focus on this external goal rather than the cultivation of certain inner resources, well, then we'll be happy. And, of course, we all know that's false.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
On that note.
Okay, oh, go ahead. No, go ahead.
I have nothing.
Oh, well, I was just going to say that I think it's interesting that you mentioned that they're trying to make money off of us because I was going to throw out there that being beautiful is incredibly expensive. I don't know the cost of plastic surgery, but I'm sure that can be found. But I read somewhere that we have spent $12.4 billion on cosmetics in 2004 alone.
Mm-hmm.
So that's... No, more than, I was
yeah.
telling Mike earlier, that's more than a small country can make in a year.
And I can tell you, you know, I'm an older woman, an older professional woman. And
25 is not that old.
And there's, in addition to, you know, plastic surgery, there's also, like, you know, luxury face creams. They're seriously like a
mm-hmm.
cream. It costs $500 an ounce. That is not a lot of cream.
Is it flecked with gold?
Actually, there is a company called Crème de la Mer who makes a product with diamonds, but don't let that fool you. And, you know, here's another fallacy that the media portrays. It's like the bigger the diamond, you know, the better it is, but it's actually not true at all. size does not matter. It's the clarity and the grade of the diamond that they're the important things. You could have a huge rock, but it could be of a low quality. But on that note, we're getting a
bit of a
tangent. Too far away. But yeah, it's not just plastic surgery and it's not just makeup. It's also like as you get older, you know, the prevention of wrinkles and these creams of, that are hundreds of dollars that are sold to women in my demographic, I'll just leave it at that. It's never ending. It's extremely expensive. So thanks, guys. Great show.
Oh.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Go ahead.
Our caller also mentioned an interesting fact, and we were just talking about the number of teenage to high school and up young women concerned with things like diet pills and unhealthy weight control behaviors. But our caller mentioned that, you know, men don't face this problem, that they've got some other exterior, I don't know what it is, standard to uphold.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to have to disagree with that a little bit. I think it's harder to pinpoint that, you know, what standard it is, whether it's the media purporting this image or, you know, just mankind in general. There's still definitely some image to be achieved. You know, if you look at sports, if it's a performance issue, you know, you look at performance-enhancing drugs. You've got steroids. You've got creatine, always trying to get that edge to win the game. I think maybe that's it. It's another form of success, but it's still, you know, beauty to be successful for women, you know, money or athletic performance, sports, whatever it is, to be successful for men. There's definitely a double standard there, but they still have their own standard to uphold, I guess. There's still definitely an unattainable standard that's set.
Mm-hmm. And just coupling that with the self-esteem issues, we don't really know a lot. We don't really have a lot of data on self-esteem and depression in men. And that's because, I think, in part because women talk about things more, that it's more acceptable for women to talk about things. And also, perhaps like the issues that men face are just outside of women's realms of understanding. But
vice versa.
Yeah. I mean, we don't know how many men are struggling with body issues because they don't talk about it. But I think it's really interesting that you mentioned steroids because I think that that is probably maybe not exactly the equivalent, but could be the equivalent to diet pills in women. I know that a lot of men take diet pills as well, but I don't know a lot of women who do steroids.
Fair enough.
And just keeping on steroids, they're really harmful. There's a reason why a lot of these things are illegal. And, we have another caller, so I think we'll take that quick.
Welcome to the show.
It's me again.
Hi.
Yeah, I just wanted to respond to Mike's comments.
Fair enough. The floor is yours.
See, the difference with, like, sports and steroids is that the success for men supervenes on a skill, okay? So, right, there's, like, the skill of football, and there's a craft involved, and there's, like, a doing something with your body that's skillful. And there's still pressure on men to be successful, but it's supervening on a skill. Whereas for women, the skill part is not so much a part of what it counts to be a successful woman. It's just like this exterior thing. And that's all I wanted to say. And I know I've already talked too much, so I'm going to hang up now.
No, it's okay. I actually have a response for you. Tell me what you think about
that. Okay.
I understand your point that there's some other end that they're using this body modification for. But I don't necessarily think that's the case. Personally, I do know a few different gentlemen on steroids. I don't know that they're the anabolic sort, but they're definitely the unhealthy, heart-influencing part. And none of whom have any professional career in sports. You know, there's definitely a following of men. I happen to know a few of the new trendy body mod drugs. There's nitrous oxide. There's creatine. There's a few different ones. None of whom have any, you know, interest in sports. They simply want to be bulky. You know, whether that is an overarching, unattainable standard for men, I don't know that I could say that, but there definitely are men out there willing to risk health, what have you, just to
sure.
be, you know, muscular, just to be ripped.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and I would say that the percentage, like relative to the population of men, the percentage of men who are grooving on that like pales in comparison to the percentage of women who are focused on, you know, focusing their energies on their appearance.
Mm-hmm.
So while it's true that there's like a subset of men that are focused on improving their appearance insofar that it does not supervene on some skill, I think that when you're talking about women, there's just a greater number of women doing that. That it's actually like the exception is that for a woman to be actually cultivating a skill more so than her physical appearance.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just going to leave it at that, and you guys can hash it out between you. And I'm
going
to listen.
Well, thank you for calling.
Thanks for calling
okay.
back.
Bye.
So I guess that would bring us to the issue of success and how we measure success for men and women. And I think that our caller brought up John Stuart Mill and how women were deemed successful by, you know, their husbands. So I think that in part that may still be true. I think that that's a difficult thing to lack, but the measuring of success is different for men and women, and I think that we would all agree on that. And in today's world, it's not 100% based on your husband, but I think that there is still that success still is highly based on, you know, your relationships for women, your relationships to your family and your children and what type of mother, wife you are, you know, how beautiful you are, how you conform to the standard of success or to the standard of women in our society. And for men, I think that it is largely in part your financial wealth, your ability to be athletic or, you know, handle like the outdoors or whatever.
Right. I think that's definitely the cliche. How much money do you make? You know,
yeah.
You measure yourself. And I'm not saying that all men do, but I think that that is the conventional wisdom of success for men.
Mm-hmm.
How much money do you make?
Mm-hmm. And it's frightening to me. I had a roommate my freshman year who told me explicitly that, you know, she was in college to find a husband. So, I mean, it still happens. And she tried very hard to reach the standard of beauty, and it was painful to watch, very painful to watch, because it's unreachable, and it really is. And so, anyways, back to the success issue. This could bring us full circle to the tombstone question of, you know, the tombstone question for our listeners who are not familiar is essentially, how do you want to be remembered? What do you want to think about yourself in your final moments, and how do you want to reflect on your life? How do you want other people to reflect on your life? And a long time ago, a couple months ago, we here at Ethics Talk tried to answer this question. And it's different for everyone, and it's a difficult question to answer. But I'm thinking that these people who base their happiness on their physical beauty have a very different tombstone question than other people. So I don't know. I feel like the whole value set is different, and it's almost frightening. I feel like perhaps examining this question, you know, may help in the shift in values, I guess, if I'm making any coherent sense.
No, you are. I'm not sure that you'll agree with me here, but let me just pose a question to you. How many women, let's just take a poll of the United States women, a hypothetical poll, a thought experiment, if you will, and ask them, you know, what do you want your headstone to say? You know, they'll give us some answers. And then we ask a follow-up question. Would you have it say anything about how beautiful you were? You know, what percentage of women do you think would want their headstone to mention that they were a size zero, you know, or that they had bleached blonde hair?
There may be a few, but what percentage of women would want that but not say? Because, you know, vanity is not very attractive.
Okay.
But a lot of people are very vain. And I don't know. I think that there are a lot of people who really do base happiness on external things.
Maybe they do, but I think if you pointed out that inconsistency to them,
mm-hmm.
I think they might take a closer look at it. You know, and to make a parallel for men, presumably, I know I don't want my headstone to say, you know, made $25,000 a year. And, you know, I couldn't care less. It honestly, I don't think it'll matter to anyone how much I made a year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think it will, but I don't know. Maybe I'm cynical. I think that this pervasive ideal of beauty is, it's run amok.
Well, you say it's run amok. What do you think are some of the consequences, if we could sort of recap or introduce some for our listeners?
I think some of the consequences are self-esteem and confidence issues. I think just, you know, there's financial consequences, like our caller was saying, about how expensive it is at any age
right.
to be a beautiful woman in our society. There's physical consequences. Just from anything as small as tanning, we all know the statistics and the information there is out there on skin cancers. Even, you know, before 30, like, I think that's one of the most common types of cancers in women before the age of 30, which is frightening. The physical consequences of steroids, the side effects of plastic surgeries, psychologically, again, self-esteem issues and confidence, and this constant irritant in the back of your mind or sometimes in the front of your mind that you're just not quite good enough. You know, if you're measuring yourself by these magazine girls rather than by your own goals and values.
And the question I've really got to ask, I mean, I don't know if we can find a definitive answer to this, but it's burning to me is, you know, let's say that you find some image of what you want to be. You know, you decide that you want 2.5 foot long auburn hair, you know, and you want to be a size 1.5, you know, I'm just making stuff up. But you
mm-hmm.
come up with this image of what you want to be. And you tell yourself, you know, once I reach this, you know, if I can diet to reach this weight, lose a few more pounds, I'll be confident again, you know,
mm-hmm.
or I'll be able to approach men, or I'll be able to walk into this office meeting and feel good about myself. I have to ask, what happens when you reach that? Do you honestly, is your self-esteem fixed? Is your confidence fixed?
Well, I think in some cases, I think, you know, for the girl or the guy who is a little bit overweight and they say, oh, if I just lose 15 pounds,
mm-hmm.
I'll be able to approach this person, or I'll be able to walk into work confidently, or I'll be able to fit into my swimsuit and feel good about myself. And I think in some cases that is enough. For some people, you know, they just want to get to that healthy body image. You know, they just want to look good on the beach, and that there's nothing more than that. And once they do look good on the beach, they're content and they maintain and they're not striving for this sickly, twiggy-type model image. But for some people, it's not enough, and once they get there, you know, they'll just keep going and keep going and keep going and keep dieting. It's almost like an addiction.
I think that's the onset of anorexia there. I think that really
mm-hmm.
describes the start.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the question I have to follow up is, can a person have, you know, a 140-pound personality versus a 120-pound personality? You know what I mean? I mean, can you honestly change that much as a person inside, you know, physiologically because you lost 10% body fat?
Oh, I think so. I definitely think so. There's this type of pleasure and satisfaction that you get when you see yourself reaching a goal.
Okay.
So let's say that I'm saying, I want to weigh 120 pounds. I just need to lose 20 and I'll hit my goal, you know. And as I'm at the gym and as I'm, you know, dieting and watching myself succeed, my confidence is going up because I'm watching myself reach my goal. And we've talked about that a lot on this
mm-hmm.
show. And there is satisfaction in that. And if I am able to realize that I'm succeeding in reaching my goal and then once I get there, feel satisfied and maintain a healthy lifestyle rather than saying, oh, just 20 more pounds, then, you know, there will be success in that. So,
I understand what you're saying about success, you know, the challenge, setting yourself up for improvement and achieving it. But I that's scary to me that 20 pounds can change the way a person perceives the world. You know, that 20 pounds can possibly make you come up with a different decision in an emergency situation. You know, that it can change your identity like that.
Mm-hmm.
That's scary to me, and maybe there is.
Well, I mean, just think about the shift in your physical health. You're feeling better because number one, you're physically healthy. So, you know, when you're physically healthy, your entire being feels better because you're not carrying around this extra weight or whatever, I don't know. And, you know, number two, you're psychologically better because you're confident, you've watched yourself succeed, you feel good about yourself. You know, I don't think that's strange. I think that it's normal to feel a complete change when you're succeeding and reaching your goals, as long as they're for the right reasons, again. If you're losing all this weight because your boyfriend's telling you you're fat, then, you know, you're not going to be feeling good about it. But if you're losing all this weight because you're like, damn, I just want to look good, and I want to feel good, and then you do, and, you know, you're doing it for yourself, I think that it's very different. So
that's a very interesting distinction, because I think that echoes some points that our first caller made about the transition of beauty from oneself to this impossible image that the media has given us, and also, you know, external versus internal motives.
Mm-hmm.
You know, are you doing it for you, or are you doing it because you need to meet this standard?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that is really interesting. Well, we have about 4 minutes left, so first I'm going to ask, do you have any concluding remarks?
I have more questions than answers, really, but I really would like to see some hard data on how this media standard affects, you know, self-esteem, whether it be in children or adults or whomever, because I've got to believe that there's something to that, whether it be in us.
All right, well, we have one more caller, and we have about 3 minutes left, so we'll take it. Hello?
Hello. Hi, this is kind of off the subject of what you're talking about right now, but I have enjoyed your show tonight, and it made me think of stories that we heard growing up, Sleeping Beauty, Cinderella. When you look at Cinderella's mean sisters, they were all ugly. But the beautiful one, you know, Cinderella, I mean, she was beautiful, and she was nice and sweet.
Uh-huh.
And I think that sends messages to kids. You know, in Sleeping Beauty, she had to, as long as she was beautiful, a handsome prince would come and wake her up and make her life all wonderful again. I think parents now are much smarter than I was when I was raising my kids, anyway. One of our granddaughters, she's 4.5 years old, and she was wearing a beautiful little fairy princess dress last weekend, and my husband and I both said, oh, you look so beautiful in that, and then she went away for a little while, and she came back, she didn't have it on, and she said, Grandpa, do I still look beautiful even without that dress? So she's picking up on some of these things, too. But
and she's four
I just
and
think
a half, so start young.
Yeah, she's 4.5. But I've enjoyed your show tonight. I just think it all, you know, that just reminded me of the stories that we tell children, and pretty people are usually the nice people.
Yeah.
Does that make
well,
any sense?
Thank you for your input. I wish that we could have considered that earlier. That would be a dialogue for an entire show, I'm sure.
Oh, okay. Well, thanks a lot for the show. It's been interesting.
Thank you.
Thank you. Have a good one.
Bye-bye. You too. Bye.
Bye. All right. And we have about a minute left, so I guess that summed us up pretty well. We'll have to consider the images out there and how we portray women and men in the media and in our stories for children.
Right, whether it be a Disney princess or a media image, this success is beauty, you know, beauty is happiness, beauty is being a good person and being rich. There's definitely something pervasive about that.
Mm-hmm. And I don't think that it'll be easily killed anytime soon. But it's just something to think about, something to chew on when we're watching these images and telling these stories. And I hope you all enjoyed. We'll be back next week. So thanks for listening.
Thank you.